This is Miss Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you're listening to Tales from the Tub. Welcome back to the Dog Days of Advent. What's the Dog Days of Advent? Well, it's a quirky little cousin of the Dog Days of Podcasting, except in December, we're maybe not so strict. Some of us do 24 days, some of us do 12, and some of us just post here and there. You can find the link to the Mondo feed with everyone's posts at dogdaysofpodcasting.com. This episode has three stories in one. Number 18, Ritual. A tiny flame held its ground, steady against a universe of storms larger than Earth itself. The candle flickered inside its mag-clamped holder, a stubborn point of gold in the dimmed common bay of the solar sail ship Aurora's Wake. Outside the viewport, the storm surged, a roil of charged particles and color, ion light rippling in sheets across the sails like ghostly fire. Inside, two boys giggled. Aaron, age 6, gap-toothed and so human it hurt, gave the dreidel an overly dramatic spin. The little carved top wobbled, then steadied, its letters flashing in arcs before skittering into the palm of his friend. Tyr, not human, not remotely, young for his species, with silver-blue eyes and soft bioluminescent freckles that brightened whenever he laughed. Tonight they glowed like tiny stars. It landed on Gimmel. Tyr announced triumphantly, though his accent stretched each syllable into something musical. That means I win all the tokens. You always win all the tokens, Aaron complained without real heat. You have unfair alien luck. Tyr pressed both hands to his chest in mock offense. My luck is regulated. My mother said so. Across the bay, the adults exchanged small smiles as they tended to the holiday preparations. Two traditions overlapping like constellations, Terran Hanukkah and the Festival of 12 Stars, the great renewal celebration of Tyr's people. Captain Reza Levine straightened the menorah, ensuring the flame stayed steady despite the shuddering from the storm. Regulated luck, she murmured. Wish we could regulate that ion flux. Dr. Surrett, Tyr's alien parent, tall and luminous and patient, adjusted the crystalline bowl that served as the centerpiece of their own ritual. Inside it, 12 miniature star-shaped lights pulsed softly, one for each principal of their festival. The sails are holding, Surrett said calmly. This storm will pass. I know, Razel watched the way the aurora like currents lifted the ship's exterior. Still, not my favorite way to spend night 6. Surrett's mouth curved. Alien, but unmistakably amused. Night 6 for you, star 8 for us. Rizal huffed a laugh. Time zones are hard enough. Interstellar calendars are worse. Back at the low table, Aaron reclaimed the dreidel. Do your people have spinning tops? He asked Tyr, already winding up for another toss. No, Tyr said, blinking earnestly. We have the star cascades. You drop them from a high tower, and they drift down like water made of color. That sounds cooler than dreidel, Aaron admitted. It is not cooler, Tyr countered seriously. You cannot shout, Nazgadol Hayasham, with a cascade. There's no shouting at all. My elder mother told me shouting is rude in holy places. Aaron's grin split wide. Thy bubby says shouting is how you know you're during Hanukkah right. The ship rocked again, sharper this time. The flames danced hard, bending sideways before righting themselves. Okay, boys, Razel called gently. Maybe scoot in farther from the bulkhead, just until the next surge passes. Tyr turned to Aaron. Do you wish to pause the game? Aaron shook his head, curls bouncing. No way. Your turn. Maybe this time you won't steal all my chocolate coins. I do not steal, Tyr protested, deeply affronted. The top gives me the coins. That's what a thief would say, Aaron replied, sage as any ancient prophet. Tyr sputtered indignantly. His freckles brightened. At the table, Surrett lit the 8th star, the glow folding softly into the shimmering bowl. Reza lit the next Hanukkah candle, adding its warmth to the tiny flame already pushing back the storm. "So," Reza said quietly, "how do your people explain this night?" Saret watched their child and Aaron, heads bent close over the spinning wooden dreidel and a pile of rapidly dwindling chocolate. "We say that the universe was born in a burst of light," Saret answered, "and every festival since is our attempt to answer it." Razel nodded. "We say we honor a miracle that outlasted the darkest week. Two parents, two rituals, two children unaware of miracles except the ones they made for each other." The hull groaned softly as the storm shifted, currents brushing the sails like an unseen hand. Aaron spun the dreidel again, and both boys leaned in, breathless and delighted. Number 19. Thread. Both boys leaned in, breathless and delighted. Not because of anything flashy or loud or particularly dangerous, although the needle in their grandmother's hand did look a little like a weapon when she wielded it, but because Grandma Delia was deep into her holiday magic. "This," she said, tugging a length of floss between her fingers, "is not just thread. This is destiny on a spool." Andrew, age 10 and already an expert in detecting nonsense, squinted. "It's green." "It is emerald," Grandma corrected, as if that explained everything. "And don't breathe too close or it will tangle out of spite." Ethan, 8 years old and wholly convinced his grandmother was the cleverest woman alive, gasped and scooted back a full inch. "Threads can do that? Oh, darling," she said, threading the needle with one graceful motion that made Andrew mutter something about witchcraft. "Threads can do anything if you don't respect them." The boys exchanged the kind of look only brothers could. Half exasperation, half awe. Laid across Grandma Delia's lap were two plain white socks. Not festive, not fluffy, not remotely fit for the fireplace, but she declared that this year the boys would have stockings she made herself, like in the old days, though none of them were entirely sure which old days she meant. She made the first stitch. A neat little curve of green appeared against the fabric. Ethan leaned forward again. "What's it going to be?" "A surprise," she said. Andrew folded his arms. "You always say that." "And am I ever wrong?" He opened his mouth, closed it, scowled. "No." "Exactly." She chained threads, red this time, rich as cranberries, and continued her work, the motion quick enough to impress even Andrew. The embroidery took shape slowly, looping and swirling, threads crossing in ways that seemed accidental until suddenly they weren't. Ethan didn't see a picture yet, but he could feel one forming, like constellations before someone traced the lines. Grandma Delia paused only long enough to sip her tea, the mug balanced on a book whose title Andrew deliberately did not read. The last time he did, he learned more about Victorian flirting customs than any 10-year-old needed. "Why do you sew our stockings?" Ethan asked. She smiled without looking up. "Because store-bought ones are fine for strangers, but family deserves the time it takes to stitch." Andrew pretended to check a loose thread on the arm of the couch so he wouldn't accidentally feel anything too sentimental. She switched to gold thread, thin, shining, and the picture began revealing itself. A tiny tree, but not just any tree. This one wore spirals of red and green that wound like the Milky Way, dotted with stars she added in delicate silver sparks. Ethan gasped. It's alive. "It's not alive," Andrew said, but he was leaning closer now too. "It just looks like it's moving." "That," Grandma Delia announced, tying off the final stitch, "is how you know you've used enough love." She held up the sock. The embroidered tree shimmered faintly in the lamplight, every thread catching the glow just so. "It's perfect," Ethan breathed. Andrew swallowed. "Yeah, It is. Grandma Delia patted the cushion beside her. Come here, both of you. I have one more to make, and I need someone to cut the threads exactly as I say. No more, no less. Ethan scrambled to her side instantly. Andrew followed a little slower, but no less eager. Grandma Delia gathered them in, guiding their hands as she chose the next colors. The three of them bent over the plain white sock, heads close together, the quiet of the room settling around them like a soft blanket. Andrew tried to act unimpressed. Ethan tried to sit still and failed. Grandma pretended not to notice either one. It was the usual congregation dynamic. Day 20. Magic. It was the usual congregation dynamic. The latecomers slipping into the back pews as quietly as possible, the choir fussing with their folders, the acolytes trying very hard to look solemn while whispering anyway. Mother Ixchel had seen versions of this scene on three different worlds now, but nowhere did it feel quite as tender as it did on Centaurus. Maybe it was the sky. Everyone said Centaurus had too many stars, so many they blurred into shimmering clouds at night, as if the cosmos had forgotten where to stop. Even inside the little stone and salvaged church, she felt their presence pressing close, patient and watchful. But tonight was midnight mass, and if the sky had opinions, it would have to wait. "Lights down," she said gently. A soft cascade of clicks followed. The overhead panels dimmed, then extinguished, until the only illumination came from the low line of candles along the window ledges. Their flames fluttered in the draft from the old ventilation system, bright and fragile, like every human hope that had ever crossed the deep. The choir drew in a collective breath. Mother Ixchel felt it then, that exact second just before the hymn began, the hush, the pause, the way the air itself seemed to lean forward. This moment had power. It always had. A kind of quiet magic no one could manufacture, no matter the world or century. Silent night, holy night. The first notes drifted into the dark, warm and imperfect and achingly sincere. The altos blended late, the tenors missed their entrance, the baritone who repaired terraformers for a living overshot his pitch by a full half-step and corrected with the confidence of a man who refused to be embarrassed by joy. Mother Ixchel closed her eyes. Across the coalition of aligned worlds, she could imagine this same carol rising in 100 places at once. Sung in English, Centauran Creole, Sol Common, Vulhari, Synth Cant. Sung in domed colonies, hydroponic farm chapels, mining outpost rec halls, starship sanctuaries. Sung by people who had never stepped on Earth, yet carried its stories like inherited starlight. The second verse swelled, soft and steady. Glory stream from heaven afar. The candles flickered. The shadows breathed. A toddler in the third pew began humming along, entirely off-key and utterly earnest. Someone's coat rustled. Someone else sniffled quietly. This was not a grand cathedral, nor a perfect choir, nor a flawless liturgy. But it was real. And when the final chord faded, trailing into the vast silence between stars, Mother Ixchel felt something settle inside her, gentle as a hand resting against her heart, familiar as a well-loved psalm. Not magic made by ritual. Magic made by them. Thanks for listening. Remember that you can find all my stuff at patreon.com/bathtubmermaid and bathtubmermaid.com, which also hosts full credits and show notes.